Welcome back to our second podcast. Oh my gosh, we were having so much fun. This has been awesome. Thank you all so much for the feedback from the first podcast. All right, so today's topic, we are going to quickly dive into it because it's a biggie and there's so much to talk about. And it's all about picky eaters. And we're tackling picky eaters from a different angle and from a couple of different angles, from what causes it to how to deal with it to how not to deal with it and some easy tips to make some really big strides with your picky eaters at home. And as a parent, there is nothing more frustrating than going through this. You know, and I still struggle with this all the time, every dinner. There are so many inconsistencies with what our kids like. And the more children that you add to your household, the more you're going to find those inconsistencies start to pick up. You know, it was interesting. Actually, like 2 weeks ago, I believe, I had roasted a butternut squash. And I'd had the squash sitting out for quite some time. And I was just debating what I was going to do with it. So I finally, it was a snow day, and I said, okay, I'm finally going to tackle this butternut squash. So I roasted the butternut squash. I cut it into halves, of course. And so I took one half, and I cut it up into cubes, and I even flavored it a little bit for the kids to really try to win them over with this butternut squash. And they hated it. Neither one of them liked it. It was a total flop. So I had another half of a butternut squash left over, and I was determined I was going to try something different with it on the next night. So the next night, I made a potato soup with it and ended up putting all that into the blender, mixed it all up, and the kids loved it. Like, it's just that we continue to scratch our heads, like, why? Why is it that they like it one way and they don't like it the other? You know, and I find that my kids, they like to have their food in separate piles. But if I mix it into a casserole, the same food, mix it up into a casserole, it's completely off limits. And you know, and sometimes it's my fault. I mean, sometimes I just overdo it. If I find something that they like, I get super excited and I take it too far. You know, my oldest, he took sliced cucumbers in his lunch every day for 3 years. For 3 years he did that until finally he stopped eating them. And he stopped eating them because he was tired of them, because I had overdone it. It was so easy for me to do it. It was something that I knew that he loved, so I just kept doing it day after day, week after week, until finally he's now doesn't even like cucumbers that much anymore. So it's very hard for us sometimes because we get excited and we just want to keep doing the same recipes over and over. But we find that our kids sometimes, you know, don't always like that they even want a little bit of variety. But oftentimes I find that it's a crapshoot. Like, you just sometimes never know what recipes are going to work. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason. And sometimes it's even more than the kids. Sometimes it's the adults as well. You know, my husband was a really picky eater for his whole life. He had allergies when he was younger, so he grew up his whole life being very picky. So we still work on that. My mom is a very picky eater. My sister is really funny about textures. You know, so it's not always about the kids. We as adults sometimes face this too. So there's a lot of different challenges that we have. So a few things could be at play with your picky eaters. You know, sometimes children just have a fear of new foods. And we actually see this a lot between the ages of 18 months and 3 years old. It's actually called neophobia. It's a fear of food, a fear of new food. And I know that sounds really crazy, but it truly is that way. And there's always a name for everything, as you all know, but this fear is very real. And I think that this is interesting because I have this condition this is actually a true condition. It's called misophonia. And what that is that you can't stand the sound of people chewing. And I have that. I have that same thing. I can't stand it. And so my husband and I, you know, we love to be able to take time to, you know, to have a breakfast or a lunch together during the day. But oh my gosh, I can't take the sound of chewing. It causes me so much distress and it just frustrates me so much. So I say that because we don't want to downplay these issues. This stuff is real, unfortunately. So sometimes our children can have this fear of new foods. Sometimes they might not even like the sound then of chewing. That stuff is real. Let's not downplay that. And sometimes our children just use the dinner table as their chance to express their independence. And we see that all the time. You know, they come to the dinner table with that full set of armor on, and they will stick to their guns to make sure they get their way with what's for dinner. And it is what it is. We've all been down that road. And then sometimes our children struggle with mealtime because there's something more serious going on. And it could be extreme sensory sensitivity. There's actually a condition known as sensory processing disorder, SPD. Tends to be higher in children that are gifted, have autism, and ADHD. If you believe that that could be a condition that your child might have, there's an SPD Foundation where you can learn some more information about that. But in that case, you know, you might want to solicit a little bit of help from an occupational or a speech therapist that focuses on feeding disorders. And I know this well. My nephew is autistic, and he too has those same challenges with the sensory, with the textures of food. You know, my sister still has to, the only way to get him to eat vegetables are to puree them. I mean, to be able to feed him the peas out of the jar, because that's a texture that he's used to. If she were to give him real peas, then he would gag, you know, potentially throw it back up, whatever that might be. So that sensory continues to be a real problem for him. So we have to really watch the types of foods that she feeds him. So in those cases, if you think that that might apply to your child, then there are some specialists who can help in that case and help to give some therapy around that. But there are many things that happen that we as parents also need to keep a mindful eye and make sure that we are avoiding as parents. And I've had a chance to spend a lot of time with picky eaters over the years in a host of different settings, you know, from cooking classes to schools to just having the neighborhood children to having my own children here in the house, and we're taste testing with different recipes. And I'll tell you some of the things that I find that are probably our biggest hindrances. And the first one is labeling our child or children as picky eaters. Because as soon as we give them that label, they latch onto it and they keep it forever. And you know how that is, because it's almost like we're giving them permission to continue that behavior. As long as we keep telling them that they're a picky eater, they're going to keep acting like that. And this is where it becomes very law of attraction-like. And to all my friends who are listening, who make fun of me because I talk so much about the law of attraction, but it is so true. You know, we have to talk to our children as if they've already accomplished what you want to see. So we need to attract those words that we want to see. So instead of saying, oh, she's a picky eater, you know, we could start to say, oh, you know what? I'm really proud of you. You're starting to eat a lot of new foods. That's awesome. I'm really proud of how good you're doing. When we start to really switch the words that we're saying, then they start to live up to that, and they start to really change and open up what they start to eat every night for dinner. It makes a huge difference. And I saw this so much. You know, I would do different cooking demos. So for example, I would set up at a health fair and I would make, I'll give you one example. I had made a kale pesto pasta. So where we had used and made a great, great pesto with kale. It was fresh kale, it was garlic, it was fresh Parmesan cheese, and then we used the pasta as well. We mixed it all together, and we brought and the kids would come through with their parents to taste test them. And without fail, every time the kids and the parents would come up and the parent would say, oh, she's a picky eater. She's probably not going to like anything with kale in it. And without fail, the child would try it and they would like it. And they were so proud of themselves that they did it. And the parent was so proud of themselves. I mean, it just became this wonderful environment. But it was without fail, though, that the parent would quickly set the tone for, okay, this is a picky eater who's probably not going to like it. So instead of that, one of the things that we can do is add one little word to the end of that statement. And instead of saying, oh, my child's a picky eater, they're not going to like it, we could say, you know what? It's not her favorite food yet. And just by saying that word yet, it seems to make it okay. And it makes it as if, though, they might not like it now, but they are going to like it down the road. And what a difference that makes in that whole overall conversation. So if you can find a way to include that one word in the end of that statement, what a difference it makes. You know, the next thing that we have to watch out for as parents too is, you know, punishing our children. And I find that, and you all know this too, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's no handbook on how to do this the right way. So we tend to resort to the way that we grew up or to the way that our parents taught us or raised us. And I always think about this because my dad always tells me, you know, the story of, you know, well, they would have to sit at the dinner table until they finished everything. And, you know, today it's a little bit different. I mean, you know, today our challenges are much different. We have a lot of different food choices, much different than before. It's just a different era right now. So a really great rule of thumb is, you know, we don't need to conform to the clean your plate club. Because keep in mind, children's portion sizes are going to be very different from ours. So we need to be very careful about that and really encouraging them. You know, a good rule of thumb with your children is, You as the parent determine what the child eats. The child determines how much of it they eat. So think about that. I used to love to be able to plate the child's meal, you know, our kids' meals. So I would plate them all myself, and we all had the same serving size of everything, and then everybody got their plates at the same time. So that means I'm now determining what they eat and how much of it they eat. And that's not really a good strategy, because again, everybody's going to want to eat a different amount of that based on their body size and all of that. So a really good rule of thumb is to use what we call that family style dinner. And family style dinner is where you put everything, all your different, you know, you put your vegetables in a bowl, you put whatever that you have, you put it into its different containers, put it in the middle of the table and let everyone serve them. Because then the children get to be a part of that process. It's empowering for them. They get to show their independence. They get to take as much or as little as they want. They've got to take a little of everything, but they get to choose how much. And that to them is very empowering. So family style dinners are really important, and it's a great shift that you can make in your home that really helps with mealtime. You know, and speaking about punishing our children, because again, there's a lot of anxiety for children around mealtime. But I'll give you a story. I was leading, you know, these cooking classes are a great opportunity to really get to kind of see this whole picky eater, you know, unfold in many different ways. But I was leading a cooking class a couple of years ago, and it was a cooking series. So it was the same amount of kids that were coming over roughly a 2 to 3 week time frame. And there was an extremely picky eater who was attending the series. And he was such a great sport. He loved the cooking, but he really had an issue with trying new foods. And it was a texture issue too. I mean, there were some real problems with it, but he was such a great sport again and just loved that whole process. Well, you know, and as a result of his picky eating tendencies, though, most everything that he ate was your typical white carb, starchy foods. Everything was really bland, no nutrients at all as a result of it. So he was excited to be a part of this process, but was still a little bit skeptical about trying new foods. And the person who was, I was leading the cooking classes at the time, but the person who was over, you know, the program was also there as well, and really created a very uncomfortable situation for the child, and said publicly that, you know, no one was leaving the building until this person tried a new food. And it was a really difficult situation to be a part of. And it was hard because it sparked, you know, a lot of competitiveness where the other kids were saying, just try and eat another bite. And that kid, I mean, he had so much anxiety over the entire experience. So finally, after about 15 minutes of this extreme pressure in front of a group setting, the child finally put a bite of this into his mouth. And then quickly, of course, had to spit it right back out. I mean, that was it. But it was such a bad way to handle that. I mean, for an adult to put that much pressure on a child to eat something in front of a group setting like this. But I think that, you know, and again, everybody kind of does it a little bit differently, but it was really, really inappropriate. And as a result of it, I mean, it creates a memory that he's going to always keep in mind about trying new foods. So I'll talk about some other experiences that I've had. That was by far the worst experience that I've been a part of and very uncomfortable. But I will also talk about some other good experiences that come from these cooking classes and the great things that it does. So, you know, I guess some advice for parents overall, though, about picky eaters is, you know, we've just got to be patient with this. And we got to know that we're going to face these ups and downs for really pretty much the entire time that we are feeding our kids meals. But that's okay with it. You know, what I've found over the years is it's really good to focus less on the eating piece of it. You know, sometimes if you can focus on things like the smell of the food, or tell me about the flavors that you taste. You know, what's the texture? Is it crunchy? Is it soft? Because that seems to take the pressure off of eating it, and it makes it more of an adventure for kids. So for example, I was talking about the potato soup that we made with that butternut squash. Well, the really cool thing is that had 5 vegetables in it. It had potatoes, carrots, celery, the squash, and onion. But they were all pureed together, so you couldn't even see what was in it at this point. And so it was really fun because the kids had a chance to really taste it and then tell what they could taste as a result of it. And that was fun because it took the pressure off of eating it and trying something new, and it made it more of a fun adventure for them. And we also have to remember, though, that children, when they are young, their taste buds are at their peak. So children start out with about 10,000 taste buds. Now, adults only have about 5,000 working taste buds. So that's why some foods are so much more intense for children than they are for adults. So again, just something good to really think about. But the great thing is, though, is that our taste buds can adjust. So I was talking about this too. We actually had a little friend who stayed the night, and we made homemade popcorn. So we didn't actually pop it, you know, out of the bag, and we just made homemade popcorn. And we even put the ghee butter on it. So in our mind, that was, you know, a buttered popcorn. And the little boy was like, oh, he's like, thanks. I think I'll just wait and eat my own popcorn. Like he didn't think it tasted good at all. Not at all. But your taste buds adjust. So the more that you eat those types of foods, then the more your taste buds will adapt to it. So you think about it with kids who, or any of us, I mean, if you used to drink pop every day, if you would drink, let's just say, for example, a Coke every day, and then you give it up for a week or 2 weeks, and then if you go back to drinking that pop, it's going to be so sugary because your taste buds were starting to acclimate to your diet and were starting to adapt back down. You know, so that's the great thing about you. You might think, oh my gosh, I can never eat this bland food or things like that, but your taste buds will adjust to it, and it makes a big difference. And also keep in mind, too, you know, when we're eating a lot of processed foods, they are processed. I mean, they are artificial flavors. There are scientists who are perfectly blending the chemicals and the flavors for that perfect sweet and salt and sugary taste that just lights up our brains. So that's what you get from flavored foods. That's what you get when you get that sweet tea from McDonald's that has that perfect sweetness that just makes you want more and more sugar all throughout the day, of course, because that is the perfect combination. These are scientists who are blending these. It's a little bit different when we make our own food. So again, your taste buds will adapt and adjust as you start to transition to your own home-cooked foods. So as we talk about this, you know, there are so many different schools of thoughts on picky eaters. And there are some things that I personally am pretty lax on. You know, so some things like hiding your food, because some are completely against hiding your food with children. You know, when we first got into Healthy Kids Inc., there was a book that came out. It was called Deceptively Delicious. And I love that book because it was really talking about, you know, how do you kind of hide pureed sweet potatoes and pureed vegetables or pureed fruits into, you know, recipes to help your kids, you know, to kind of get some more fruits and vegetables into them. But it was also met with some skepticism too that said, okay, that's not really what we need to be teaching our kids, that we're hiding food from them. And truly my mantra is you just got to do what it takes. I mean, I think that there's a good balance of both. I mean, that really helped us, that Deceptively Delicious. I liked it. I mean, it helped me kind of get through some picky eater stages as we continue to make that progression. So, you know, I think it's to each their own, but there certainly are many schools of thought. And I hear a lot about, you know, oh, we don't want families to be a short order cook. And I agree with that. So basically what a short order cook means is that, you know, I kind of liken it to Thanksgiving Day. You know, it's Thanksgiving Day and you've got three different families coming and one family likes this, one can't eat this. So you conform your whole Thanksgiving dinner to make sure it appeals to everybody. But in many cases, that's what many are doing every night for dinner. You know, my husband had allergies growing up as a young child, so his mom had to make him a special dinner every night for his whole childhood life. Sometimes there are situations where it calls for that you have to make those special dinners. But it also is really tough on our sanity. I mean, it's hard for us as parents to be able to, you know, try and accommodate and appease every child. So it's really kind of discouraged that we do that. But I will say, though, that I mean, I find that I have one child who loves quinoa. I have one child who used to like quinoa, but again, I overdid it by trying to serve it way too much. So now he's more into things like a wild rice. So you know what? I might make a big batch of quinoa on a Sunday, and then my one little one can just have it for lunch or have it for dinner or whenever he wants. And, you know, so I'll do that. You know, I've got one child who loves cooked carrots, and I've got one who likes them raw. Okay, well, I'm just going to serve both variations of that same vegetable. I'm just going to serve it two different ways. So things like that, I don't really get that caught up about. I mean, I'm okay with that. It's not causing me extra stress or a lot of extra work. I'm also not real particular about dips. You know, for example, you know, using ketchup or using ranch. sometimes I think it's whatever you can do to get your child getting used to eating that vegetable. And I know many would disagree with that, but you know what? If it takes your child dipping it in a little bit of ranch, I'm okay with that. But what my goal though as a parent is to make sure whatever they're using to dip is going to be the healthiest possible. So if I'm using ketchup, then I'm going to be looking for a ketchup that is obviously, you know, because ketchup has tomatoes, tomatoes are high on the pesticide residue. So I'm going to make sure that it's an organic ketchup with no high fructose corn syrup or added sugar, if at all possible. So I'm looking for better quality products. And then with a ranch, it's something I'm going to make myself then. And I haven't perfected that ranch. I'm still kind of working on that right, that perfect homemade ranch recipe. So it's not great yet, but I continue to kind of work on those things to at least make whatever they're dipping a little bit of a better option. And smoothies is another, you know, sometimes smoothies become a hot topic for, you know, for families too, because there are some, you know, some professionals don't want kids consuming their, they don't want them drinking their fruits and vegetables. They really want them just to eat them. And again, you know, I find that whatever it takes, you know, I go into schools and I'll do smoothie demonstrations for the kids and they love it because they're getting a chance to do, they're getting a chance to consume kale and carrots and avocado. And I mean, all it's usually about five different fruits or vegetables that they get into one smoothie, and it makes them feel so good about it. And if that's how you get your kids finally, you know, consuming or tasting avocado, then I think it's totally worth it. So, you know, I'm pretty lax about smoothies. I think they're great. And especially as you can get more and more vegetables into it. I mean, that's a great thing. You know, and I'm also, I'm not a big fan of food art. You know, and again, that's just me as a busy parent, and I know you're the same way too. Like, I'm just not going down that path of food art because it's just a little bit too intimidating. I don't want my kids to get used to me having to decorate their plate and make designs and shapes out of food. I don't really have time for that, and I can't, it's not sustainable for our family. So, you know, when it comes to food art and kids, I mean, I think it's great. I love to look at the pictures. It's just not, it's not for us. So I don't really feel like that's necessary to get your kids involved, you know, to overcome picky eaters. But some might disagree though. Some might disagree. So there is something that I'm not lax on though, and that is saying, you know, the kids coming to the dinner table, seeing the food and saying, ooh, and gross. We've had this with our kids where they come to the table, my little one says, ooh, that looks like barf. And that's where we draw the line, because to us, I mean, that this is manners at the dinner table, and the message is to be respectful and kind to the person that is preparing your meals and don't hurt their feelings. You know, so when it comes to that, I think those are good manners that we really try to teach the kids at the dinner table. And whether or not they like the food doesn't matter to me, but just use your manners at least and don't say things like that. So here are some tips that have worked well for the families in our community. And I'd love to hear about these success stories and overcoming picky eaters. And I'll talk a little bit more about cooking classes in a good way. So, you know, some other cooking classes that I've done, you know, recently we had a child come through. This was actually last year. We had a child come through a cooking class who had only had one vegetable the entire year. And it was just, I mean, one vegetable was all that she had had. And so we had our cooking class, and, you know, the class had a chance to make veggie cakes. And the veggie cakes usually include, I believe it includes the zucchini and carrot. And I believe we also have one more veggie to that. And then also we did cauliflower fried rice. And that was where we take out the actual rice and we rice the cauliflower instead. And you know what? The child did awesome. She did awesome and she ate all of it. And so that's the exciting part about cooking classes. There's just something about that environment that's really good for kids. I mean, they come in and kids just feel so good about it. They feel so good about just taking that one bite. One, they're a part of the cooking process and they're proud about that and having created something, you know, but they love that, and they love that they've tasted something and tried it and they liked it. And so I find that cooking classes are really good for kids. So as a result of that, actually in the month of February, we're going to be rolling out our first live streaming cooking class for your kids. You know, we know it's hard. Not a lot of areas have cooking class opportunities, and we want to make sure that our kids can still, in our Healthy Kids community, can still experience that. So very soon we'll be doing that, where we are live streaming. And we'll send out the recipes in advance. So if you want to go ahead and get all everything that you need, and the kids can start cooking at home along with us and still create that same experience and get them involved in the kitchen. So, you know, some recipes that have worked well for us in cooking classes. The kale smoothie that we have on the meal planner is a really good one. The kale pesto pasta that I mentioned from that first cooking demo was really good. The crunchy veggie burrito is a really good one that's got multiple different vegetables in that. It's very, very simple to roll up. It's great for lunches. And those veggie cakes, which are also really good. I believe the veggie cakes are in a couple places on the meal planner, but also in the gluten-free meal planner. So those are really great recipes, and that's a really great opportunity to expose your kids to new things. The second is gardening. And gardening is such a great exercise for children. And we see that in our community as well. Because here's what's great about gardening. You know, sometimes it can take our kids 10 exposures to a fruit or vegetable before they start to try, before they will try it, or before they will try it and like it. Gardening is totally different because every time that child comes in contact with the growing plant, it eases their fear and it counts as an exposure. So now we find that kids are becoming very receptive to food. So by the time that your plant, your produce is ready to be harvested, your kids are absolutely ready for it. They are totally ready to consume it because they have watched it through the growing process. They've had all that exposure and now they're not intimidated by it anymore. So as a result of it, gardening is so great in schools and it's getting bigger and bigger in schools and it's really helping to get our kids try more fruits and vegetables. And the same thing is happening at home now too. So gardening is awesome. Another thing that is working well in our families, and this actually is working well in our family too, you know, if your kids are very competitive, then the 5-a-day challenge is really great. You know, that was actually our personal goal for the year. For our, one of our personal family goals was to consume 5 fruits and vegetables a day. And it really is, I mean, it technically should be 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, but I'm not going to focus on that right away. I just want to keep it simple with the kids. I'm saying 5 fruits and vegetables a day. So our kids are competitive, so they're working to meet that goal every day. And, you know, going back to that potato soup with the that we had with the butternut squash, I mean, that was 5 fruits and vegetables throughout the day. So our kids loved trying that, let alone the fact it was something new that they had never really tried. But they just were excited that they had tried 5 fruits and vegetables in one meal. Plus, they had also had some throughout the day, too. So for some families, and if you have competitive folks in your family, then you might find that that's a good way then to get them focused on something new and meeting a goal instead of really focusing so much on, you know, trying a new food. And another great thing that we've seen in, with some of our families as well is just that idea of serving something new with something that they're used to. And I talked about this on the last podcast, too, about a family that we had worked with. And, you know, they had not really eaten a real vegetable. Their kids had not eaten real vegetables. And I can absolutely relate because our kids were in the same boat too prior to Healthy Kids. So, you know, they were only eating, you know, vegetables that might, you know, come out of a can or were a part of a processed food of some sort. So with one of the meals, we did a grilled cheese with broccoli, with fresh broccoli. And, you know, again, I mentioned this on the last podcast, but it would have been really great to do a different type of a bread, a healthier bread, other than just white bread. But we didn't want to shock the kids too much. So we kept the sandwich as it was, even though it wasn't, even though it was still white bread, we still kept that because we were already introducing something new with the broccoli. And we didn't want the kids to have too much change to have to overcome at dinner. And it worked. And so those are great examples of pairing something new with something existing that they're used to help to ease that anxiety. And, you know, we also have some families in our community where it's not just the child who's picky. You know, sometimes it's the spouse or it might even be the grandparent that's picky. And so, you know, in many cases, they have to just fake it. I mean, that's what and it takes a family focus to pull that off. And we have that sometimes at our dinner time, too, where my husband, again, because he was picky his whole life, you know, he has brought on so many new foods that he's never experienced before over the last couple of years. But still, it continues to be a work in progress. So I talk about that butternut squash, you know, in cubes, and he took one for the team. So he plates, you know, a couple of little pieces onto his plate and he'll eat one. And, you know, the kids see that he's eating, which is fantastic. So he takes one for the team. And, you know, we focus a lot on conversation during dinner, and we don't really make it so much as to who's keeping score about who's eating what. I mean, it's really a lot more on the conversation. So that kind of diverts the attention away from, oh, how many bites did Daddy eat for dinner? But he's at least taking it, and that's great, and he's faking it for sure. But it works, and it works until, of course, you know, he starts to kind of adjust it, and we find that right way, which he actually really liked the soup, so that was a big deal, too. So sometimes we just have to prepare it a little bit different. We have some other families who let their kids pick from the meal planner. So every kid gets together on a Sunday and they pick up and they look, go through the meal planner and they look for the recipe, and that becomes their recipe for the week. One kid picks this and that's what we make, and that becomes their meal that they really get behind and they're excited about it. And again, that kind of helps to lessen their anxiety. They get excited about the recipe, and that really helps with picky eaters too. And then we also have some families who really conform to the idea of serving dessert with dinner. And it's a great idea. You know, we don't want to use food as reward. We don't want to use dessert as the reward for them finishing their dinner. Shouldn't be that way. We're, you know, it's kind of sending the wrong messages. So in some cases, the parents just say, okay, well, I'm just going to serve dessert along with the food. I don't care when the kids eat it. They can eat it first if they want. It doesn't really matter. But if I'm going to serve it, I'm just going to serve it all together and just make it a part of the meal. And I think that's awesome. I mean, again, it gives kids their independence. It doesn't matter whenever you eat dessert. No special rules to say dessert has to be at the end. So the kids love that, and they love being able to show some independence at the dinner table and just eat dessert whenever they want to. And that certainly helps too. So those are just a few of our tips for picky eaters. And again, you know, it's a constant effort. But one of the biggest steps that we as parents can take from this point is just to remove that label, picky eater. That's the best thing that we can do, because the more that we call them a picky eater, the more we have given them permission to continue with that. And it's hard to reverse that. I mean, you talk about years and years and years of picky eaters. I mean, really, it's very tough to try and deal with that when you're in your 20s and 30s. And I know that from experience too. You know, it's much easier to deal with them when our kids are younger. So hope that you've enjoyed all of this. Also, speaking of that family style dinner that we talked about a little while ago, we actually wrote an ebook about overcoming picky eaters. And you can actually read that book. It's under the member resources. But within that is a video of how to lead a family style dinner in action. So if you have an interest in what that looks like and how to plate your food and, you know, some dinner time conversations, that's always a great resource to check out as well. All right. So thank you guys so much for joining. I can't wait to be back again next week. We've got some really great content that is coming your way. So stay tuned, and we will talk to you all again real soon. Bye.